Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am Charlton Doki, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, December the 27th, 2021. At least four people died and dozens of others got injured during the Christmas celebrations in Juba.
Here in Juba, the night of 24th, we had a lot of motorbike accidents. We had registered like 43 cases of involving motorbikes.
And some Sudanese Christians say they are disappointed that some pro-democracy activists organized demonstrations against military rule on Christmas.
Everybody has the right to demonstrate against whatever they see, that we need peace, we want justice.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Police Service says at least four people lost their lives over the weekend and at least 43 others were injured in road accidents in Juba. A police spokesperson says most of the accidents happened on Christmas Eve, while gang-related crimes were reported the day after Christmas in Juba's Haithoura area. David Monodanga reports for VOA from Juba.
Police say the accidents occurred in several suburbs, including Gudele, Kator, Munuki, and other densely congested areas of Juba. Police say the majority of the accidents occurred because people were driving under the influence of alcohol. Brigadier General Daniel Justin, the South Sudan National Police Service spokesperson, says most of the accidents involved border or motorbike taxis.
Here in Juba, the night of the 4th, we had a lot of motorbike accidents, whereby we registered like 43 cases of involving motorbikes, road accidents. For one of them were actually light injuries, and then we have five cases of big injuries. Some broke their legs and so on.
Justin says yesterday, Boxing Day, a group of young people were traveling to Juba from Mangala Payam of Juba County when their vehicle overturned, killing two.
Yesterday we have registered four cases of death related to the road accidents, especially vehicles. Four vehicles were involved, whereby four people lost their lives. The car was coming from Mangala in Kirikad area. The car was turning, and as a result, two people lost their lives. Yeah, but it was not that they were actually for a picnic or something like that. Then we have like nine severe injuries, and then 16 light injuries.
Justin says the police also arrested about 27 members of different gangs who were armed with weapons such as machetes, knives, and sticks. He says the police are in control of the situation and asked the public to work with officers to improve the security situation ahead of the New Year celebrations.
So we have been in touch through media, talking to the people to cooperate with our forces and their cases. If there is a situation suspected to result in any insecurity, they have to report it to the nearest one. So our forces are still on the ground, they are monitoring, patrolling. People celebrate well the Christmas and also the New Year.
Justin says police were able to quell gang-related violence in time for any fatalities. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Authorities in the Jonglei state capital Bor say at least two people were killed and several others injured in criminal attacks over the Christmas holiday. The state also documented criminal activities by unidentified gunmen. The state police commissioner confirms the incidents and says police tightened security around the town. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Tuong Majuk, the acting governor for Jonglei State, says state authorities documented a rise in criminal activities during the Christmas festival by unidentified gunmen.
for the last 9 days, for preparation for ECMAS, that's from 17 to 12, 2021, the criminal has intensified their criminal activities over the population of Jonglei State, whereby the state has recorded the following incidences. On the 23rd, 12, 2021, the same criminal attacked a small herd of 23 head of cattle and killed one person and another person wounded in Dukpadiet Payam. Therefore, exactly on 24th, 12, 2021, the criminal ambushed one of the youths of Pariak Kulnyang Payam and killed him on his spot. On the 25th, Murli criminal killed one person, also wound one another in Dukpadiet, Duk County. On the same day, 25th, 12, 2021, a cattle came between Bur Town and Baidit Payam. One person was wounded and the criminal went away with cattle and recovered.
Majok says he has ordered the security forces to be more vigilant and intensify security in town and neighboring villages.
Government outlined an intensified security patrolling to observe peace and order in all the counties and inside here Bur Town. There is a preparation for security forces to prevent any other criminalities inside town. And we ordered this security patrolling to reach up to the new year. This is what the government has prepared for people to have the peaceful celebration for the ECMAS and the new year.
Major General Joseph Mayana Kon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, confirms the incidents and says police have not yet arrested any suspects. Akon says the police and other security forces are doing more to protect people as they prepare for the New Year celebrations.
I urge our people are to protect themselves, especially when they are working at the outside areas of Bur Town, especially around the areas of Baidit, and so Kulnyang. So our people used to go outside to patrol those areas. Recently, forces went outside patrolling. They would still go out during the 31st of December. They will go out for protection of the 1st January.
Religious leaders in Bor had raised concerns of security fears during this year's Christmas celebrations, saying normal activities in villages such as marching and large gatherings in churches would be affected because of fears of attacks. They urge state government to put security forces on maximum alert to protect the people during the festival. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Some Sudanese Christians say they are disappointed that pro-democracy activists organized demonstrations against military rule on Christmas. Some Christians in Khartoum say they were unable to celebrate with their loved ones because roads were blocked and phone and internet services were also shut down. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Of Sudanese Christians sang Christmas hymns at All Saints Cathedral of the Episcopal Church in Khartoum on Saturday. Some seats remained empty as many could not make it to the church services due to roads blocked by Sudanese security forces to prevent protesters from moving to some parts of the capital. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus after church service, Ezekiel Kondo, the Archbishop of the Episcopal Church of Sudan, expressed dissatisfaction with the turnout in the congregation on Christmas Day, saying many faithful could not attend the celebration due to the roadblocks. Archbishop Kondo says even though the right to demonstrate is a constitutional right, it should not interfere with religious freedoms of parishioners to attend services.
Everybody has the right to demonstrate against whatever they see, that we need peace, we want justice. It should not take place during the holy festivals like Christmas, like Ramadan Eid, like Eid al-Fitr. I think these are holy festivals and they should be respected.
Sudanese security forces used tear gas and other ordnance to disperse protesters from accessing the presidential palace. Bridges linking Khartoum, Omdurman and Khartoum North were blocked. Phone and internet services were shut down for more than 16 hours. Since the October 25th military takeover, pro-democracy groups have continued to stage protests demanding a full return to civilian rule in Sudan. Some Sudanese Christians condemn protest organizers, saying they are not respecting the Christian faith. Khartoum resident Amna Osman Abdullah is one of them. She says, "I don't think if this was the Islamic Adha festival, they wouldn't do this. They are supposed to postpone the protest and make it the following day." Osman says, "We should respect the religion regardless of being Muslim or Christian." Osman says she was unable to communicate with people or send Christmas wishes to her relatives and friends because mobile phone and internet services were down. Another Sudanese Christian, Stephen David, says Christians are part of the Sudanese society and their religion should be respected. David points out that Christians also participated in the Sudanese revolution, which led to the ouster of longtime President Omar al-Bashir. David says, "When we raise the slogan of freedom, peace and justice, we wanted to feel that we live in a just society. We want to feel that there are freedoms that are respected." David says, "We want to see a just treatment on the level of different religions, regardless of being Jewish, Muslims or Christians." David says, "Despite all the challenges, quote, God made it possible for us to come to the church to pray, enjoy and share the word of God together," end quote. Archbishop Kondo called on military and civilian Sudanese leaders to engage in a genuine and brotherly dialogue to resolve their differences. He says he's optimistic that the demands of the protesters will be met and the rule of law will be reestablished in the country.
There is no other way that people will bring about peace unless they sit together, being civilians or military. It is important that people come together because they need one another. You cannot have peace and you cannot run the country without the other. This is our message. We want a dialogue, dialogue and dialogue.
The Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors issued a statement Saturday evening saying at least 235 people were injured, including 6 injury cases due to live ammunition. 3 of them are listed in critical condition. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state released more than 20 prisoners last week as a Christmas offer to the families of the inmates. Governor Sarah Kleto says those she released had committed minor offenses and stayed too long in the prison cells because they could not afford the fines they were ordered to pay. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Sarah Kleto, the Western Bahr al-Ghazal state governor, says she released the prisoners as an act of kindness to help those who had committed minor crimes and spent months or years in prison. Kleto says she consulted with the South Sudan Prison Service and found that 23 of the inmates had committed minor offences. Kleto says 22 of those released were males and one was a female who had a two-year-old child with her. She says she found out that some of the inmates had been arrested because they fought among themselves and some had stolen funds, charges that require the prisoner to either pay a fee to their victims or just pay a court fee which they couldn't afford. Kleto says she paid the necessary money to court on behalf of the 23 inmates and they were released.
I had to do a little bit of research and I found that they were in prison just for minor offenses. And some of them, just they needed to pay small fines, maybe 20,000 South Sudanese pounds, things like that. And they are being locked up for a long time. Which is not necessary. I know the conditions are bad and people are tempted to go and steal, but then they end up in the prison. And also the prison is very crowded. There are like almost about 700 inmates right now. The building, the capacity of the building is only for 200 inmates. So we have been trying to find ways to declutter or to reduce the population in the prison.
Kleto warns the prisoners she freed not to commit any crimes that will bring them to prison again, cautioning that she will not help anyone she has already helped get out of prison.
They should be good citizens, and I will be following up with some of them. I don't have their contacts, but what I told them, I need to hear back some updates from them in the near future. So just to make sure that they're still out there and not back in prison or doing any other offenses. But from what some of them have talked about, the conditions in the prisons are not good, and I believe they will not come back after seeing all they have gone through.
Kleto says it has become common for inmates at Wau Central Prison to try to escape, but says they often get caught. She says the biggest problem at Wau Central Prison now is congestion.
The main challenge is the population that they have, the number of prisoners that they have, and they say like every day there are more prisoners coming. The other issue is sometimes they may run out of food because they have a contractor, but if their money is not big and they don't have enough, they have come to my office to request food, and sometimes this puts a lot of pressure on the state itself because we don't have any budget line item for that. It's not always, but I hope that they continue to get their food supplies for that purpose.
Godfrey Victor Bula, Executive Director for Justice and Human Rights Observatory in South Sudan, says Kleto's prisoner release is better than doing nothing at all, but he says that was the least the government could do. He says the government should identify the causes of the prison congestion than just deciding to release a certain group and leave others.
The best approach will be that the institution within the criminal justice system must cooperate and must live to their obligation, constitutional obligations of delivering service to the people. For instance, it is really very shameful that you detain somebody and you cannot produce somebody to court simply because there is no transport to take that person to court. And you are every day in the court. Why do you go to court when you leave the subject matter of the court unable to come to court? So the root causes of those things must be given priority, must be addressed.
Kleto says she has been working with the South Sudan Prison Service to transport other prisoners with minor offences to a prison cell in Raja County where there are few prisoners so as to deal with the congestion in the Wau prison. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
The world is reflecting on the legacy of South African anti-apartheid icon Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu, who died Sunday. The Nobel Peace Laureate was known worldwide as a champion of human rights. Linda Givtash joins us from Johannesburg with this report.
Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu is being remembered for his efforts in transforming South Africa into the free rainbow nation it is today. The Arch, as he was known, died at the age of 90 in Cape Town. Tutu's peaceful activism against the country's apartheid government is attributed to the avoidance of widespread conflict. As chair of the country's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, he showed the world resolution could be attained without violence. Pumla Godoba-Madikizela is the research chair in historical trauma and transformation at Stellenbosch University in South Africa.
After so much tragedy, after so much violence, that sense of hope, that sense of possibility that victims and perpetrators can actually engage in a dialogue in a way that is much more hopeful than what a vengeful kind of approach offers, that is the legacy of Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Tutu was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his activism. The international recognition Tutu received never changed his values of equality and public servitude. Imtia Suleiman is chairman and founder of the charity Gift of the Givers and worked with the Archbishop.
When we visited him in Cape Town for the first time, you have this feeling you're coming to this great man, you know, and how are you going to approach him? He was so easy when you walked in, simply dressed, simple office, such humility. He was so warm. The embrace that he gave us was so gentle and so caring. You could just see this man exuding love.
Tutu was unaffected by political affiliations as well. He continued campaigning for equality long after South Africa became a free democracy. Gobodo Madikizela says Tutu applied the same scrutiny to the now ruling African National Congress as he did to apartheid leaders.
Right after the leadership of Nelson Mandela, he again continued as that voice that was reminding the post-apartheid leaders about their promise of freedom for everybody. When he could see that they were leading in a way that was self-serving, he called them out. His boldness, his moral stature allowed him to do that.
Gobodo Madikizela says his criticism fell on deaf ears among many in the ruling party that underwent a national corruption inquiry this year. Tutu's campaign to tackle extreme inequality with a wealth tax also remains unfinished. Experts say his death is a moment to reinvigorate the public to take on issues he was passionate about. June Bam Hutchinson is a researcher with the Center for African Studies at the University of Cape Town.
The one thing that we're sort of losing grip on in the everyday is the values. It's the values of peace, of anti-violence, of an inclusive anti-racism and non-racialism. And we need to be reminded now that we've lost Archbishop Tutu that we need to revisit those principles.
From the head of the African Union to the Dalai Lama, leaders worldwide have been sharing tributes calling Tutu an inspiration to the world. He's survived by his wife, children, siblings, and their families. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Amnesty International says a vaccine mandate that seeks to keep Kenyans from accessing essential services will violate the constitutional rights of citizens. The group also warns the Kenyan Ministry of Health that the mandate will not achieve its objective, adding that it will also not address public skepticism. The statements come after the Health Ministry issued a directive that proof of vaccination will soon be mandatory for Kenyans to access public spaces. Amnesty International's Executive Director in Kenya, Irungu Hilton, spoke with VOA's Peter Kloti.
Vaccine mandates in the context of Kenya are crude political tools to deal with a public health issue. It's without doubt that we need to increase the number of people who are vaccinated, but it is completely ill-advised to start locking out people because they have not vaccinated. If anything, the government needs to go to those people and encourage them, dissuade them of any myths that they have about vaccination, and essentially give them the confidence to take the vaccine that is now available to them.
But some people are suggesting that the directive forms part of the government's effort to limit the spread of COVID and its variants, and that this could serve as an incentive.
I mean, coercion can never be an incentive. It essentially is purely that, coercion. On the 14th of December, the High Court received a petition from a citizen who managed to convince the court that the idea of locking out Kenyans from essential services is unconstitutional. And the High Court essentially suspended the directives, citing this as unconstitutional. This means that the reiteration of the vaccine mandate is not only troubling from a public health perspective, that enshrines the right of people to give their consent to be vaccinated. But secondly, it is unconstitutional, according to the High Court of Kenya. And what it does is essentially place businesses and public officers in very difficult position, because they have to either, you know, remain lawful with an eye to the judgment of a high court, or they have to follow an executive order that is not even backed by legal force at the moment. There is no, these directives have not been gazetted. They are simply public pronouncements.
But some supporters of the government are of the view that the government is mandated by the Constitution to protect life and property of Kenyans. And if it finds ways that medical measures that are being implemented could help save the lives of people and protect them from this disease, then it should go ahead irrespective of what some people might think is coercion. What are your thoughts?
I mean, Amnesty International Kenya completely upholds the constitutional obligation of the government of Kenya to protect citizens, particularly from this miserable virus that has been with us for close to 2 years now. We do not think that that constitutional obligation should amount to the coercion and the infringement of the rights of Kenyans in this manner. Many people have come forward for the vaccination. In fact, what's ironic about this particular measure at this time is that we are just, I think, about just under a million short of the target that the government set of 10 million vaccinations by the end of this year. So we are actually progressing. But of course, we are not progressing as much as fast as we can or we should do, particularly given the fifth wave or the introduction of the Omicron variant.
So in Amnesty International's view, what is the best way forward in order to fight this disease? And secondly, you are aware that Kenyans will be going for elections soon. People anticipate that there will be big rallies in the campaign leading up to the next general election.
There are measures that can be taken. We've summarized them in terms of three measures. The first is educate people, that people who have taken the vaccine, people who understand the risk that COVID-19 has to us, individually, as families, as a nation, educate the people who are still unclear about the risks of remaining unvaccinated. The second thing is protect each other. Mask up, sanitize, remain physically distant from people. Do not travel to rural homes, particularly to meet with elderly relatives when you have not tested yourself. Many of us at the moment are experiencing flu-like symptoms. And in some cases, it's influenza. In other cases, we've seen an increase, 30% almost increase in COVID-19 infection. So we have to ensure that people continue to test themselves and do not expose others. And the third thing that we need to do is encourage each and every Kenyan to vaccinate. But I think it is really important that vaccination remain voluntary, not coerced and not mandatory.
Irungu Hilton is Amnesty International's executive director in Kenya. He spoke with my colleague Peter Kloti from the capital, Nairobi. That's all we have for you this Monday. I am Charlton Doki. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and on your phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect yourself and others from coronavirus. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for COVID-19. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Fogo mashakin, dunia de fogo lakabata, dunia de fogo wajagelba, dunia de fogo suata, lakini bes kankoreja, kelita masa bara moyo wena, lakini bes kangelba waja, kelita asma ana biguna, mama matakore, dunia yade, yauze de.